In today's show, we have Mark Romito. Mark is with AT&T and is the Director of External Affairs. I met Mark through the Cincinnati Rotary Club, and today we're going to talk about innovation in cellular technologies and community relations.
If you're ready to learn how technology is driving business innovation in Cincinnati and beyond, you're tuned in to the right podcast. Join us for interviews and discussions with business leaders, innovators, and visionaries. With our host, Sam Schulte, CEO of Unstoppable Software. This is Unstoppable Talk.
Mark, welcome to the show.
Hi, Sam. Thanks for having me.
No problem. First question, how did you get into your field? What's your career path been? How did you end up where you are?
Well, I ended up in telecommunications pretty much by accident. When I was in college, the job market was very tight, and I heard a good way to land a position was through the co-op program or intern program that they had at the college. And I interviewed at a few places to be a computer programmer, but they wanted someone who could stay longer than three semesters. And anyway, after going through several of those interviews, I interviewed with a local Cincinnati-based telecommunications company, and they hired me in the regulatory department.
Okay.
From there, I ended up being one of the leaders of that department, heading up regulatory management and being the lobbyist for our Kentucky territory, and stayed with them for almost 27 years until I was unceremoniously relieved of working there. And then I was able to land a position with AT&T.
Okay. And what was one of the first projects you worked on there at AT&T and that sort of got you started?
Well, with AT&T, we do, and this particular position, I do a lot of work with our stakeholders, which you can define that as just about anyone outside of the company. Mm-hmm. I am externally focused. So I'm looking at government officials at the federal, state, and local level, in district, in my territory. I'm looking at nonprofit organizations, chambers of commerce, and even customers. So just about anyone that's outside of the company, I have the potential of dealing with, and we refer to them as stakeholders. And so occasionally we'll have a piece of legislation or something like that where, this happened when I started with AT&T, there was a piece of legislation that we wanted to get passed. And it was an exciting time for me because I got to meet the legislative caucus for Southwest Ohio and talk about that legislation and talk with them individually, talk with them in groups, and try to persuade them that the legislation was good for not just AT&T, but good for Ohio.
Interesting. We should say that, you're here to talk about your career and sort of the cellular trends in cellular technologies, but this is not an official AT&T interview. You're not representing AT&T for that.
That's right.
As a public company, it's
important to note that. That's correct. All my opinions are my own, and AT&T may or may not agree with those.
Exactly.
Still glad to be here. And also, I'll just let you know as well, I'm more of a generalist. I'm not really a tech person, but I have been in the industry for over 30 years, so
sure.
I'm somewhat dangerous.
Yeah. And you said you work with how many counties in Ohio?
23.
Okay, great. So that's
I go up as far up as a little north of Lima, Ohio, and then I follow the state line all the way down to Cincinnati and then over to Portsmouth.
What do you kind of do with those counties, and what's your day-to-day job working with them?
Well, if an issue pops up, for example, it may be in a city where we may have difficulty getting a permit to install a fiber or to install new poles or something like that, our network folks will engage me, and then I'll try to work and facilitate between our network folks and the city on what they need, and do you really need that? Can we send it to you later, or whatever the situation might be, so that we can get the service installed as quickly as possible?
Do you end up going to a lot of planning and zoning type meetings and stuff, or is it more working with?
I have. A better example would be with regard to recently there's some legislation on small cells, which installs a piece of technology that will help with the development of 5G, but specifically with small cells, a number of cities had to implement their own ordinance. And when I would become aware of that, I would read the ordinance, figure out if the ordinance was consistent with the state law. And if it wasn't, then I would reach out to the city and possibly even attend their city meeting and testify at the meeting.
Yeah, so I'm on a planning and zoning commission in Sharonville, and so I've seen that firsthand of it when you're talking about ordinances and you know, that sort of law being written. You know, what do you base it on? And if a small town is sort of making it up on their own, it can be very difficult to figure out, you know, it's like, is it compliant with federal, state law, you know, county law, everything else. And certainly it can help to have a boilerplate to start with sometimes. Or I think we tend to say, let's look at other communities and see what they've done and see what we can learn from them and so forth.
And that's typically what happens. You know, no one wants to recreate the wheel. And we try to be a partner in that and trying to show the particular cities, you know, where we find their ordinance to be something where we can have a path to success, where it may be in conflict with the state law, where it may be somewhat unreasonable in what they're asking for, but also to let them know that this is a, you know, you may be going on the right path, and this is a, you know, turning out to be a good ordinance.
Okay. You know, when you look at the counties that you work with, what is their access in general to, say, like the level of connectivity we have in Hamilton County here, where we, you know, have pretty good signal just about everywhere and high speed and all this? Obviously, I'm assuming in more rural counties that's not the case. What does that look like in the?
Yeah, it can be more spotty in the rural areas. Mm-hmm. You know, it's no secret that you know, typically the newer technology, the advancements in the technology, go where there's more population. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen that with the you know, going as far back as custom calling features. If you know, remember those, you know, things like call waiting, when they were first implemented, it was in those areas that had the greater population. The same with broadband. Broadband is expanding, but you know, it's very difficult to make a business case to put it in a very rural area where you may only have, you know, 10 customers that in that particular area where that equipment will serve. The equipment may cost, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars.
Sure.
You may only be able to reach 10 households, and then those 10 households may or may not sign up for the service. So it becomes very difficult to have the business case for that. But in general, though, I think our service on the wireless side is quite good. I think it will turn out to be getting much better and going forward because of the FirstNet product, which this is something that's relatively new. The federal government, because of 9/11, if you remember that day, many of our first responders couldn't communicate well with each other because of the stress on the network. And as a result of that, the 9/11 Commission made one of their recommendations that there should be a standalone dedicated network for first responders in the case of an emergency like that. So they put that out for bid, and AT&T actually won the bid. It's a 25-year agreement. We're putting in literally billions of dollars into the network to expand the network for all first responders so that they would have that access. And you may want to think of it in terms of a three-lane highway where the left lane would be dedicated for first responders, and then the other two lanes would be for commercial purposes. If, in case of an emergency and that left lane would get too crowded with first responders, we could then expand them over into the center lane or even into the right lane if it becomes, you know, that serious. But they will have that dedicated network that is also somewhat flexible, expandable, if you will, to handle the emergency.
Do they have special phones that run on different frequencies or anything for that, or is it really just
that? There is a special channel that, and part of the agreement with the federal government on that is we agreed to invest a certain amount of money. The federal government provided to us something called Channel 14, which is like specified spectrum that would be used solely for FirstNet. We report to the FirstNet Authority in this matter, but we're responsible for building the network, educating first responders on about the network, and then signing them up on the network.
Interesting. Well, and it seems, you know, I think that a lot of folks would, especially in rural areas, you know, access to 911 and sort of quick first response, if you will, is some folks would see that a little bit as a human right almost, you know, like people, that's something people all deserve, right? Obviously, there's things like broadband and whatnot might be a little more luxury. So that's interesting because, you know, obviously you don't want it to be difficult to get someone to come put a fire out at your house, even if you are, you know, in a less populated area, right? So,
right. And the FirstNet is more of a, you know, again, dedicated for the first responders. And, you know, 911 is actually
sure.
another network
yeah.
altogether. But because of those investments to make FirstNet work, there will be some enhancements also to the normal network,
okay.
you know, as we put up more towers, for example,
yeah.
to provide service to some of these more rural areas or cities where and first responders that are in more rural areas, there will be benefits for the customers as well.
Okay, interesting. And you mentioned putting up towers, and I know that's a complicated process, or it used to be harder, but I think it's getting easier. I've seen some information out there about, you know, how much smaller and smaller different cell towers and stuff have become, and, you know, easier to not be so visible and such.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, I guess, can you talk about the advancement there at all, or what's kind of changed?
Sure. One of the things that I think is going on in the industry, and this is one of the big changes in the industry, is the trend isn't so much for building these very large cell towers that we're familiar with as we drive down the interstate. There's still going to be a need for those. You know, the trend right now, especially as we're looking at 5G, especially as we're looking at areas that where we may be experiencing some congestion, is for these small cells,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, these are just much smaller types of antenna that can go on top of a utility pole or a telephone pole. And in some cases, they can be, you know, on the side of a building or
mm-hmm.
camouflaged in some way. But, you know, they're really, for the most part, pretty innocuous. I mean, you know, a lot of times people don't even notice, you know, they're there. It's some, you know, some of them look like a, you know, 5-gallon bucket sitting on top of the pole,
yep.
really with some electronics near it. But, you know, they're very much needed to bring the network closer to the customer.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, they're, you know, that we have better, they'll have better capabilities and better quality of service
yep.
as well. And it comes in very handy when, you know, you have certain areas like, you know, I'm just using an example of over the Rhine or down at the banks where, you know, different times of the year, you may have a very large group of people in
mm-hmm.
one place.
Mm-hmm.
That puts a demand on the existing network.
Mm-hmm.
And by having a few of these small cells strategically located in those areas, we'll be able to handle the demand.
Well, I imagine in a place like over the Rhine, too, I mean, there's probably been a ton of uptick and just demand for high speed and cellular as that area has revitalized, even for the folks, even when it's not a big crowd or opening day or
mm-hmm.
something like
mm-hmm.
that there. I mean, when it was all, what was it? 8 out of 9 buildings were vacant, I think,
right.
in
right.
say the year 2000.
So as people start moving in and of course they have more and more demands and needs, and that's the reason, you know, for this new technology and for really for 5G as well.
Yeah.
The evolution to 5G.
Let's take a quick break. This podcast is sponsored by Unstoppable Software, a Cincinnati-based technology consulting firm. At Unstoppable Software, we bolt on to your company's team and accelerate their ability to deliver custom software development projects. With our deep experience in manufacturing, engineering, and healthcare, we can tailor systems for process improvement, data analytics, machine learning, and document workflow, so they become a user-friendly, perfect fit for your employees and the way they want to work. To learn more about how we make our clients unstoppable, visit us at unstoppablesoftware.com or call us at 513-382-8499. And now, back to Unstoppable Talk.
Let's talk about that a little bit, that evolution to 5G.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of folks have heard of it, but probably don't know a whole lot about it other than they've heard of 4G and 5G sounds better.
Right. Well, it's, yeah, it's one more.
Yeah,
so,
1A.
So it is better. But, you know, seriously, it's something that people a lot of times just associate it with speed. Mm-hmm. And they think, well, you know, it's just going to be faster. It's just another, you know, addition. It's not that big of a deal. In reality, it is a big deal. I mean, it is unprecedented speed. I mean, it will be much faster. I think we've gotten speeds of up to two gig in some of our testing, and someone told me that that's like 100 times more or 100 times faster than the current 4G environment. They said it's like downloading a 2-hour HD movie in 10 seconds. Hmm. So I mean, it is going to be fast, but the other two big advantages to it is what we call massive connectivity. And again, thinking about your discussion of over the Rhine as it gets populated, when these vacant buildings become populated with people living in apartments or whatever, people more and more have things that are connected to the internet. You know, their watches, there are thermostats, security systems,
IoT,
dishwashers, refrigerators. I mean, the list goes on and on. Mm-hmm. The 5G will allow for more of those sensors, more of those Internet of Things devices, more devices to be connected. Okay. So it'll be able to handle more and more of that. If you think again of when you're at a ball game, or at a concert, you have a lot of people, big demand on the network. Everybody's trying to post their photo or whatever. In a 5G environment, it wouldn't be a problem. Today, we have distributed antenna systems in a lot of those venues to help with the traffic. Mm-hmm. But in a future-looking 5G environment, you would not really need that distributed antenna system.
Interesting. There's a number of startups that are out there who have built products, which I won't name any startups, but there's products in the space to try to help with situations like that by going around wireless and not using cellular, for instance. Mm-hmm. So people mm-hmm. doing, sound-based data, people doing, image-based data, stuff specifically at like a ball game. But it sounds like if 5G is available, you really won't need to do any of that.
That's right.
Because those are all sort of Band-Aid solutions mm-hmm. a little that, bit
that's
to
correct.
Begin with.
That's correct. They're kind of like workarounds.
Yeah.
And then the third big thing with 5G that I should mention is the ultra low latency, mm-hmm. and the latency is basically the buffering mm-hmm. that goes on as your device is talking to the network and the network is sending the information to your device and vice versa. You know, we're going to be getting down to where it's almost as quick as your brain processes mm-hmm. Reality. Mm-hmm. That's how fast the network will be, and that's really necessary if you're looking ahead toward things like autonomous vehicles. Mm-hmm. You'll need that virtually instantaneous communication.
Yeah.
So that the car will be able to sense if something's in front of it. I mean, if that car is driving at 30 miles an hour, I mean, it needs to be very quickly. How do I deal with that thing in front of me?
Interesting. Yeah, and you think about just the amount of data a car like that is capable of generating if it's got multiple cameras and radar and, some of them have LiDAR and other sort of things on them, right? Tesla or somebody wanted to view any of that in real time for some reason. There's no way right now. It's just too much information.
Right. But, the cars are even going to be talking to each other.
Sure.
Yeah. And letting them know of things that are, coming ahead or
a hazard or something.
A hazard may be up ahead. I mean, they may sense some additional braking of the other cars, and they realize the traffic jam is forming. Mm-hmm. It's pretty amazing, but it is tons and tons of data.
Well, then the sort of addressable space, or you talked about Internet of Things and this sort of thing, is interesting because I mean that's sort of almost like adding more seats to the baseball stadium. To go back to your analogy a little bit there mm-hmm. in that situation, because mm-hmm. You think about your typical home router. Most of them probably have a capacity, if you're running on your Wi-Fi, of, I don't know, a few hundred devices, unless you really change up your IP configuration a lot or sort of hack it, right? I don't think you could very easily do that out of one house right now with existing cellular, right? Mm-hmm. Have 256 devices, let's say, using an LTE connection in your house would be crazy.
Right.
But I think taking what we'll see more and more to the extreme, people are putting connecting so many devices nowadays that you wouldn't think to connect. You know, like I know a company is working on an IoT, you know, connected air freshener, for instance, like just little disposable plug-in, you know, air freshener that also connects to your, you know, to the internet and does something. I don't know why you'd really exactly need that. But
They're only limited really by their imagination and what they could do. I mean, I've heard of some of these applications where, like with dumpsters and trash pickup, where you know they may have a schedule of picking it up every week, but because they have that sensor in there, they may know, you know, 3 days early that it needs to be emptied now.
Yeah.
And then they could send the crew out to empty it. And that kind of ties in with, you know, talking about the Internet of Things, it, you know, kind of moving into another discussion of smart cities, you know, where, you know, again, all of these sensors can do so much and can really be of great benefit. I know we did some work with in California during their drought, where they implemented a number of laws concerning, you know, washing your car and watering your lawn, where all that was restricted. Through an Internet of Things application, we were able to show them that, you know, you've been wasting, you know, millions of gallons of water through leaks in the current infrastructure. So, and that was, again, by measuring the water pressure at different points, you know, maybe even some of the sensors that could detect moisture. But anyway, through that, they were able to save just gallons and gallons of water.
Sure.
And help out in that situation with the drought.
So my customers are very active in industrial Internet of Things, and you figure, you know, within a particular factory, so they all would like to, so connectivity is a problem, right? Getting all the devices running within a huge factory all on your Wi-Fi, for instance. And a lot of them, I think, have looked into cellular solutions for that, but it's just not, the latency is an issue because they need to know real quickly when something happens. And then there are certainly factories out there where every single widget, let's say, that they're producing has an embedded, you know, NFC or something, you know, very cheap inside it.
Right.
Well, you know, I mean, down the line, if it becomes affordable enough, could that all be cellular? You know, potentially. I mean, right now, you could never have thousands and thousands of cellular devices within one factory.
Right. But, you know, the thought is with 5G, you know, the possibilities are there for, you know, these smart factories to really be able to reach, you know, a fuller potential, you know, with regard to the sensors and with regard to the data. Of course, you know, that it begs the question, okay, you've got all this data. What are you going to do with it?
Sure.
And, you know, you still need to have a process of converting that into knowledge.
Yeah.
But yes, I think the 5G with the lower latency especially will help in those cases with industrial applications and factories. It will help also with some of the telehealth activities that, you know, they're even talking about, you know, remote surgeries and those sorts of things. Again, that's... it's going to revolutionize, I think, in a number of industries and a number of ways we do business today.
And how long has 5G been in the works, and what's kind of the time frame you think for deploying it all out?
Well, I think you know it's been bandied about for quite a while, 5G, and you know, we have some test markets right now. I think we're in something like maybe 20 cities or something like that throughout the country. We have more that'll be coming online in 2020. You know, standards are, I think, not fully agreed upon as yet, but I mean, they're getting close. I think that's expected in 2020. But again, we've been doing some trials now for over the last year, and expect to see more applications in 2020. But again, it will be, you know, even those applications that we have existing now are in, you know, parts of cities.
Sure.
And so, you know, it's still going to take a while for us to build out the network a little bit and get this out to a broader reach. But it may be like, you know, I was talking about earlier with the broadband situation, where you're going to have a slower rollout to certain areas versus others, again, based upon the needs and the network.
Well, and I don't even know, are there any 5G devices that are already out there sort of like future-proofing them, or is anyone selling 5G phones yet?
You know, I really don't know the answer to that. I've seen some names bandied about that, that they're being ready and they're, we're wanting to introduce them soon, but I'm not sure. Okay. That's kind of out of my, my bailiwick.
Do you think, you mentioned, rollouts and stuff to rural areas. A number of years ago, I remember reading that all over different African countries, a lot of them were like, they never had, internet cable, or they never had cable TV. They never had even telephones. They were just going directly to cell towers because, it's like, rather than trying to put things in the ground and go all that, like cut through jungles and craziness, we're just going to put up cell towers. It seems like, as all this gets cheaper and so much faster and everything else, like there's probably no reason to have. I mean, if you're talking about, I think you said 2 gigabit a second speed, or I'm not sure whatever the 5G standard is. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about that, there's really no reason to have a wire at all, right? And so is that something, if you're talking about, will there be future evolution of broadband cities or anywhere? And I guess you probably wouldn't even bother trying to run more broadband out to more remote areas. You would just always put in 5G because it's so much faster.
Well, I think you're touching on some things that everyone in the industry is looking at. Mm-hmm. But, you got to keep in mind, too, that you're talking about wire for what we call the last mile. There's still going to be a lot of wire and a lot of cable out there.
Well,
all those cell towers and all those small cells, have to be connected by fiber.
Sure.
And like you said, they have to talk to something. But I think you're right. I think the opportunity is there for certain cases to kind of leapfrog, if you will, where they won't necessarily need that kind of broadband build out. The options will be there with wireless.
Yeah, don't have to build
every house. Looking ahead, but we're already through some of the federal funding, we're able to offer fixed wireless in certain rural areas, where that basically puts a little mini antenna on the side of the house, and it's able to connect that way with the larger cell tower. Mm-hmm. That kind of gives that a boost, boosts the signal. But that's called fixed wireless through some of the funding that we're able to get from the federal government to expand that in those rural areas.
Hmm. Okay. And how do you think the economy? We've had a pretty booming economy recently, but if you look over the last, say, 12 months, some folks have some concerns about economic slowdowns and such. How do you think that sort of affects all this 5G plan and everything that you're doing?
I think at the end of the day, all these, these things, the Internet of Things, smart cities, the use of 5G and all that, you need to prove it in. And, people may have concerns about the economy. And when that happens, they become, less and less likely to take a risk or to try a new technology. But I think the big thing for us is to prove to them and to show them the value of it, the benefit of an Internet of Things solution, for example, to show them how this will make them much more efficient and show them the cost savings, because the economy can, just give that, general feeling that, gee, we need to hunker down right now, not take a risk, not do anything new, not try anything new. And, the opportunities are starting to open up where they should continue to look at these things. But, you saying that about the economy, I think, cybersecurity seems to be more and more on people's minds. Hmm. And I don't know if that's with some of the interaction with some of the, countries that we may not be on the greatest of terms with, I'm thinking of in terms of North Korea or China. Mm-hmm. There's also some concerns about, sourcing and making sure we have, have manufacturers and suppliers that will make the equipment we need in case of international crisis.
Sure. Well, or even just, all the, intellectual property issues around, you're developing something new like 5G, and then if you have it made in a country where that's weak, are you giving it all away?
Yeah, so, and I can't remember the name of the Chinese company, but they, you know, the thought is that some of their products may be somehow compromised in some sort of way. Mm-hmm. And there's discussions about especially the smaller providers, mm-hmm. How are they going to take that out of their networks and remove those servers from their network and replace them? You know, will they get some sort of, compensatory funding or something like that for that?
Gotcha.
We do not see that as a problem for our network, but it could be a problem if a smaller provider went in whole, full steam ahead on that particular vendor.
Sure. So what are some other new areas of the business that you're getting into and kind of new projects you're getting involved in?
Well, I'm not necessarily involved in these, but two areas of the business that really do not fit what you normally think of when you think of AT&T, I think, is the entertainment business.
Yeah.
We've purchased Warner Communications, and as a result, we now, I guess, own Batman and that franchise. We're more engaged in Warner Brother movies and HBO, CNN, that sort of thing. So we're becoming more involved in content, creating content, and it's a whole new side of the business, for us.
Yeah.
The other area that I've seen that just doesn't seem to necessarily fit our knitting, but when you think about it, it really does, is our company called Xandr, which is a advertising and analytics company. We're again trying to use big data, understanding big data to better target advertising and that sort of thing. So it's not your it's not your dad's phone company anymore, so to speak.
I mean,
we're really engaged in a number of different things.
Well, I think like you told me earlier, AT&T is a technology company. I mean, it has a lot of different divisions. I mean, wireless is only one piece of it.
That's right.
What's really like the most personally rewarding project that you've worked on recently?
I think that would have to be working with the AT&T Foundation. I think it's not only recently, but really probably the most rewarding project of my entire career. We have a program called Aspire, which it's an umbrella term for all the different activities we do with regard to education, in particularly high school graduation and a path for the future. And the AT&T Foundation, the majority of its philanthropic activity is toward Aspire projects. So these would be things like mentoring, or things like, helping parents fill out the all the required forms, FAFSA forms for entrance into college.
Yeah.
I mean, there are any number of things that can help young people, high school age, graduate high school, but also develop that plan for future success. It exposed me to some things that I just never gave a lot of thought to, prior to. I'm talking about things like, the term called ACEs, which is adverse childhood events, and how that can affect a student. And I'm talking, things like, a divorce, drug addiction, parent, being an alcoholic, living in an area where there's a lot of gang activity. All of these things put these stressors on these young people that make it very, very difficult for them to stay focused on an education. And so as a result of my work with the AT&T Foundation, I've been exposed not only to some great kids, but great organizations that do work with these young people so that they can get on the get on the right path. And we think it's very important, not just for our country. We started this, I guess, 15 years ago or so with the Colin Powell's America's Promise Grad Nation, where they were saying, there were some high schools that were, kids were dropping out at a rate of 60%, up almost 60% of the students on any given day won't be there, 4 years from now. Mm-hmm. They all dropped out. That's shocking when you think about it. I mean, those are probably young people that will need some sort of social service program to survive. They will have more difficulty being employed. They're more likely to be in prison. I mean, all these things and all these bad consequences. So not only for the country's success, but for our own company's success. I mean, we always need a pipeline of good employees, and we need people to be successful so that they can purchase our products and services.
Sure.
So I just felt moved by that because, you know, my previous years in my career, I was pretty much focused on the government side of things and the regulatory side of things. I never really dealt much with the community aspects. But hitting, you know, that those issues with the AT&T Foundation, and then just seeing how the AT&T Foundation was willing to step up during the recent Dayton tornadoes and the mass shooting, where they wanted to help, and we were able to contribute to the Tornado Relief Fund, and as well as the Oregon District Tragedy Fund, and we're able to help both of those. And that just makes you feel good that that's a part of my job.
Yeah,
because I'm the interface with the foundation for my territory, for my 23 counties, that, you know, we do have an impact,
yeah.
You know, and we are helping people.
Well, and probably a lot of folks don't know that foundation exists or is active or, you know, about the stuff you're doing. So,
well, we try to get the word out there occasionally, but, you know, I do deal, it's primarily with the social service agencies and
sure.
agencies that deal with the young people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good to hear. Mm-hmm. Great. I mentioned earlier that we're both in Rotary and the Cincinnati Rotary Club. And, you know, yesterday we heard a speaker from NKU talking about how, you know, really one of their biggest concerns was completion, right?
Right.
So, you know, you're talking about kids not finishing high school, but it's a problem really for that whole, you know, 8-year period of your life
mm-hmm.
that they have a real issue of kids going to 1 or 2 years of college, accumulating some debt, dropping out, and pretty much getting nothing for
right.
their investment.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't necessarily even end, you know, with a high school diploma sometimes, that people, hopefully they're in a better spot to avoid truly negative consequences because they did graduate from high school, right? But
right.
they don't get the benefit of a full college degree. Right?
Well, that's for sure. But, you know, the high school diploma is the bare minimum for the future.
Sure.
I mean, you need that to get to college. You need that if you want to move on into the military.
Mm-hmm.
Really,
yeah.
You need that, you know, really to just move forward even into, you know, a career position,
mm-hmm.
or even if you decide to go into a trade career,
mm-hmm.
all these are great options. I mean, all of them are great and, you know, valuable and valid options. But you need, you know, just get that basic high school diploma and develop that plan,
yeah.
you know, for going forward. But he was, you know, you're right. I mean, the whole thing of making them sticky,
mm-hmm.
so that they'll stick around, so that
sure.
they feel welcome, you know, and, you know, at the college level, feel like, oh, you know, I do belong here.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's critical for them to keep up with it.
Mm-hmm. And so, speaking of Rotary, and how long have you been in the Rotary Club then?
I've been in Rotary for about 6 years now.
Okay. So why do you keep coming back? What have you gotten out of being in the club?
Well, you know, it started because my old boss was a Rotarian in the Columbus area, and he highly recommended it, said that it would be a great great thing to help and complement my job, which
mm-hmm.
I found that to be true.
Mm-hmm.
I'm aware of things that are going on in the community, you know, before a lot of other people are, because we have, you know, such great speakers. I have the opportunity to engage with some of those speakers,
mm-hmm.
and also, you know, there's that service element as well, which is important. I think our mutual friend Gretchen Finniff
mm-hmm.
was the one that first introduced me to it, I went to that. I mean, a friend of mine, George Boyle, also spoke so highly of it that it was something I wanted to explore more. And every week I learned something new. Every week I meet another Rotarian and have something in common with. And so it's just it's addicting.
Yeah, and Gretchen sponsored me into the club as well, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, you know, because you work downtown, and how long have you worked downtown for?
Well, I've worked downtown since the early 80s.
Yeah. So,
you know, my other position as well.
So have you found that being in the club means you just know a lot more people downtown in general? And I've sort of noticed that because I knew no one down there.
Yeah.
And then now I just run into people all the time. Like, oh, you know, there's so-and-so. Have you noticed that as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And if you go into a coffee shop in the morning for a meeting, you know, a lot of folks do that. And you look around for the person you're supposed to meet with. But I mean, I'll see several Rotarians doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's people you recognize all the time downtown at the coffee shops, wherever.
Yeah. What do you think about just the downtown working environment in general? How that changed, that change over the last decade or so. What are your thoughts on that?
I think downtown is still an exciting place to work. Mm-hmm. I wish it had more shopping options.
Yeah.
You know, with Macy's closing, it was, it's a little more difficult. There's not really a lot of retail downtown to, kind of make that piece of it worthwhile. But I mean, there's still that excitement. We just recently had, Marty Brenneman's last ball game.
Yesterday.
Or he called the last ball game. And his last ball game. And, you could still feel the excitement walking around downtown. You know, there was the crowd, there were people, wearing red. It just is a neat place, to work. I think it has a certain unique energy to it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think, and it is too bad, regarding the retail. I mean, hopefully that will change and it needs to be a different kind of retail. But, the whole sort of going downtown to Christmas shop or whatever,
right.
And you can't really do that anymore, right? I used to do that for fun. Let's go downtown and just, do our Christmas shopping down there, for instance, and that was with, like, Tower Place Mall and stuff, back when that was around. But but certainly that landscape has changed a lot. And it may have nothing to do with downtown. It might have everything to do with Amazon, right?
Well, that's true. That's true. But we did the same thing. I mean, it was an outing to go downtown,
sure.
To go shopping, to see the Christmas displays, that sort of thing. It's a lot of fun. And it still is a lot of fun. But I think the retail is an issue that is recognized by a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And how it's going to be addressed, I don't know. But I know it's on people's list of things to look at.
Yeah. In regards to AT&T, so and how long have you said you've been there for?
I am going on 9 years.
9 years, okay. AT&T. So I'm curious, what are some of the benefits you think of working for? I mean, AT&T is a massive organization. I don't even know how many employees they have.
We have over 260,000 employees.
Massive number.
It's mind-boggling.
Because I think the U.S. Postal Service has around 100,000. So, I mean, twice as many as the Postal Service. What are some of the benefits you think of working for? What are the upsides and what are the downsides and what are the challenges maybe of working for an organization that size?
Well, I think on the upside, you have a level of expertise that is just unparalleled. I mean, the quality of people we have working for AT&T and their knowledge is just amazing to me. The other thing I think is exciting is you can almost name any issue and someone in AT&T is looking at it and working on it and trying to develop it. And it's just an exciting time to be in a company like AT&T who is working with small vendors and other partners to develop some of the things we were talking about earlier, the Internet of Things and smart cities and that sort of thing. We have these foundries. We call them foundries, but they're kind of like think tanks on steroids, if you will, where they bring together, the marketing people, the engineering people, and
an incubator or something.
Yeah, and they bring an idea. They focus on an idea, like could be connected cars or whatever the issue is, and then they just think about it and try to develop products and services around it. Try to bring those to market faster. It's just an exciting place because of the variety of work. And again, so many things going on. It's just volunteer activities with the employees. We just started a initiative not too long ago. We're in over 20 cities called AT&T Believes, our Believe Initiative. These are like grassroots employee selected initiatives that AT&T employees in various cities want to engage in. For example, in Chicago, they wanted to address the neighborhoods that were most affected by unemployment and by gun violence. So they focus on those. A lot of our volunteer activities are focused in there. In Cleveland, we've adopted digital literacy is the issue we want to focus on. So I guess I just bring that up because there's just all these opportunities to address, you know, the whole person.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, your philanthropic side, you know, your work side, your thirst for knowledge. I mean, there's always something to learn, mm-hmm. more to learn, something new coming down the pike. Mm. That's the benefit. On the downside, I think a company that big, it can be hard to get everybody on the same page. Mm-hmm. I think it can be hard, too, with communication.
Yeah.
I kind of, you know, cut my teeth on a company where, you know, if I needed an answer from somebody and I could call them, I could email them. If I had to, I could go to their office.
Yeah.
Now with employees, you know, we have employees all across the country, and sometimes finding the right person can be difficult. And if you have difficulty reaching that person or getting a response, that can be a challenge as well.
Yeah.
At times, not all the time, but I mean, I'm just saying on those few occasions, because
can't just go down the hall.
You can't go down the hall. Yeah. And you can't run into them at the, you know, water cooler.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, which sometimes some of the best ideas come from that.
Sure.
But, you know, you can't have that in every situation. And Cincinnati is an area where in this market, we don't have a huge number of employees. A lot of the employees have the opportunity to work from home. Hmm. And a lot of them are like me. They may be salespeople or in some other capacity where they're, you know, traveling a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, sometimes you don't have that large group of people together in one place. Now, there's other places like Atlanta, you know, Dallas.
Sure.
That's where you have more concentration of employees.
Yeah.
And Cleveland, too, to a certain extent.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned just a lot of the philanthropic stuff going on, because I think a company of that size, I mean, there's no reason to ever get bored, right? Because it's like there's always something you can do to
That's
do.
Right.
And, you know, a friend of mine worked for another really large organization, and she was a CPA. And she was just doing their normal business CPA things. But they had a foundational, not-for-profit service sort of thing going on, sort of like what you've talked about. And so she actually moved into that to do their, manage like their fundraising numbers and all, you know, that sort of accounting, which was, you know, very fulfilling, right, compared to the sort of just general business accounting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But didn't have to leave the company or anything. You just, you know, because it all is the same. It was within their walls, right?
Right.
So, you know, like you said, that's a nice benefit to have that not all companies can offer, for sure.
Right. And the opportunity, if you wanted to go to another state, I mean, the opportunity is there with an AT&T. That's not, you know, my particular goal at my stage of my career, but you know, I could definitely see, you know, and I have seen, you know, a number of young people who come into the company and, mm-hmm. You know, they find the opportunity for advancement or for a new job in a new location.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a lot of opportunities
if
you're willing to go to where the need is.
Definitely. Well, Mark, so if folks want to reach out to you at all or talk to you about your work in external affairs or any of the kind of stuff AT&T is working on, what's the best way for people to contact you?
I would say they should contact me at my email. That's mark.romito, R-O-M-I-T-O, @att.com. And I'll be glad to chat with them.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who has an interest in what AT&T is doing or just working with local governments and counties to do what you do, I know there's a lot of folks from all kinds of industries that need to do that sort of work. So certainly some good, you'd have some good thoughts on it. But yeah, I appreciate you coming on the show.
And you know, that's the business I'm in, external affairs. So they're all external stakeholders. And so, you know, it's just part of my job to meet with them, talk with them, help them in any way.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on the show.
No, I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, Sam.
It's been great to learn about what your company's doing and sort of your background. And it's been a pleasure.
I enjoyed it as well. Thanks. Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you for tuning in to Unstoppable Talk. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you did, be sure to support the show by leaving a 5-star review on iTunes. And learn more about this show by heading over to unstoppablesoftware.com. Until next time, keep innovating.